Hello and welcome to the Red Leaf Card, your home for Canadian soccer news and views. My name is Jacob. Today we have a guest onto our episode, and his name is Philippe Valihau.
Vallejo, but it's okay. It's a hard last name.
Yeah, and he's a reporter for The Last Word SC, contributor for AFTN Canada and Northern Tribune, and he's the co-host of Coast to Coast FC. Nice to having you, Philippe.
Thank you for inviting me on. It's good to be here.
Yeah, there's a lot of good news and some bad news for Major League Soccer. And as noticed, the U Sports Draft just passed. So what's your view on the U Sports Draft?
I thought it was a pretty good, decent U Sports Draft. I thought that one of the things I enjoyed from the U Sports Draft was that a lot of the teams kept it local. So I'm pretty sure, barring the first round pick, Owen Shepherd, who was from Cape Breton, to Valor, I think the next few, four or five, were all local picks for the local teams. So Vancouver chose a BC native, Luke Norman. Atletico Ottawa chose Ottawa native from Carleton. York chose a York United native. So a lot of local talent that obviously they keep a close eye on, bringing them into the teams, which I think does well since every, you know, CPL club wants to cater towards its local market. So bringing some feel good stories of, you know, a local college kid comes in, maybe does really well. It has a performance like Eric Cobsaw or Anthony White. And we said, you know, that's a story that a lot of people would love to be a part of and hear. So I think that was one of the things that I really enjoyed. And then also the certain qualities of players that were picked. A lot of central midfielders, a few forwards, not that many defenders. I think only like two defenders, one left back, or three defenders, two center backs, a left back, and then one goalie for Halifax. So, yeah, it was a pretty good draft overall, and not many surprises, but still, I think it was a good year, and I'm excited to see what these young players do in 2024.
So, what was actually surprised you coming into the draft?
I mean, obviously the trade that happened beforehand with Vancouver FC and Cavalry, the first ever draft trade that has happened in the Canadian Premier League history. That one was surprising going into it. I didn't expect that. I know that's quite common in other major sports, and with drafts, you can have draft pick trades and stuff like that. It's very common in the MLS as well. But for it to happen for the first time in the Canadian Premier League was pretty exciting, though I don't really know what was the trade about. It just said they would trade spots and then Vancouver FC would have future considerations, quote unquote. I don't know what that entails, so I'd be very interested to see. Maybe that just means some goodwill with Cavalry, but I think what that sort of signified was that Cavalry had two players that they thought would go pretty close to each other, and they didn't want to risk it, so they switched. And Vancouver, I think, only really had one player on their radar, and were fine to save their second pick till pretty much close to last. So I think that was pretty surprising going into it. Hopefully that opens the doors for more potential draft trades, because that's always something fun in North American sports to see that being sort of like an added currency to the way that teams sort of inter-negotiate and inter-trade. But through surprising of the draft itself, I think Owen Shepherd being first round overall pick, I was a little surprised. I've been reading some previews for the draft and stuff like that from guys like Ben Steiner, and he wasn't in most people's, like, even first round. So let alone being picked first overall was quite surprising. But I mean, looking at some of the highlights that he had for a forward of just 21 years of age, he's a very powerful, lethal finisher. I think he might do quite well at Valor, given that they have little depth now at the forward position after letting go of so many of their strikers, literally all three of the strikers that they had on their contract. last year all of their options were declined. So barring Sean Hundel that they just signed, Owen Shepherd might be the backup, and that might be a decent little option for Valor.
Yeah, as known as the first overall pick, Owen Shepherd is actually from Newfoundland Labrador. That kind of is now he's going to Winnipeg for Valor FC. And there's also Christian Zipieri, who from York University. He played for Vaughan Azzurri, and one of the Zipieri family just signed with an Italian team.
Oh, really? What Italian team?
I keep forgetting the team name, but I know it's kind of a surprise for Zipieri's family to actually bring in the team, the legacy of the name growing. And I think York United did bring in a good pick for Christian Zipieri, since even Vaughan Azzurri is a good team for developing players. And York United did get the good catch. I know Dino Rossi knows really well about League One Ontario. And basically, he said that he's a player to look out for.
Yeah, that's another player that I think a lot of people thought that he would go in the first round quite quickly. And everyone, I think, knew that he wanted to go to York United. So it was pretty much a match made in heaven. And like you said, I've heard from other people around the scene that he's a very good player, and didn't know about his legacy, though, his family legacy. But yeah, no, I think with York United in their midfield positions, they have some pretty decent midfield players, Brem Sumaru, Gagnon Lapere, and what they might need sometimes is some young players that they can rely on. That's something that they struggled with a lot last year. With the under 21 minutes, I think literally beating the 2000 mark by 7 minutes in the very last game of the season. So having a few more young players, he's only 20 years of age, so he fits the under 21 quota perfectly. Having a few more of those young players in their team to be able to rely on and to make up those other 21 minutes, I think is something that they'll definitely look forward to. And Zepieri seems like he can slot into the team for Martin Nash quite easily. And I think with the new owners coming in and them putting an emphasis on young Canadians, developing young Canadians, having him as your first real project with new owners, with this young Canadian that you want to build up, I think he's going to have a lot of opportunities, especially since the owners want to follow through on their promises and make some statements early on in their tenure.
Yeah. And also another returning player that played for the Canadian Premier League is Frank Frecineri, who I think he played for Atletico Ottawa. Now he's drafted for Valor FC. So right now you have a redraftee. I think I might be mistaken that Kaden Rogozinski was drafted in a previous draft, but he didn't play.
I think so.
I think it was two drafts ago that he got drafted, and now he's drafted again. And it's actually now you have one player, as known as Halifax Wanderers, who signed. Is Daniel Clark. I think that Daniel Clark actually is a good goalie. I think he's a good potential of being a good goalie for as their backup goalie. But it does question a lot of these players that got drafted who are going to be getting that youth sports contract to play in the Canadian Premier League, and who is going to be the next Canadian Premier League player to thrive.
Yeah. And I think, you know, some of the players you mentioned there, Daniel Clark with, you know, Jan Fili in there. You have an established goalkeeper, but you know, compared to maybe some of the other goalkeepers in the league, he might not be the strongest. So having a young player that can learn under him and be maybe even be his successor, I think with Daniel Clark, what I saw of him in the Cape, you know, in the Esports Championship with Cape Breton, he was a very good keeper. The penalty shootout, he reads the game really well. And I think he can be somebody that can push even Jan Fillion at that starting goalkeeping position, especially since Jan Fillion is known sometimes to make a few mistakes. So I think it's a great signing for them. It was one, again, that was expected. And you mentioned, you know, Rogozinski and also Facchinari, those two players that have sort of been around the scene before. Now I feel like the league has more ability to play young players than it did when these guys maybe were originally drafted in. And, you know, Facchinari is part of the Whitecaps system. So a lot of, he has a lot of experience from his youth on how to work in a professional setting. So bringing them in, hopefully we can see them actually, you know, make a contract. Because that's the thing, right? Is a lot of these players, they're good players, but it's not guaranteed that they can, you know, get in on the contract. They're just basically invited to train with the team and have that prospect. But I'm hoping that for a lot of these players, they do get that opportunity and they have the ability to showcase why they were in the draft or why they were picked in the draft. But yeah, some of these players, I think, have the potential to be good CPL players. And you never know who might show up and be basically sort of like a Dan Nimick who came out of college, got in the MLS draft by the Whitecaps. They let him go and then Halifax picked him up. A lot of these, you know, college / university players have a lot of ability in them, have a lot of potential in them. It just depends where they land, who's the coach, and how can they sort of cultivate him into becoming the best player he could possibly be. So that's one of the fun things with the draft, is seeing who makes a cut and then who actually shines through in the coming seasons.
Yeah, so I mentioned Facchinari again. Yeah, he did play. He's from the University of Windsor, and he played for Windsor City FC. And he actually played for Atletico Ottawa on loan for 2020. And then later in 2021, he played for San Diego Loyal and went back to the Whitecaps. And then later went to Windsor City FC. So I think that Valor FC might take in a good drafty, but it just questions if they're willing to bring him in for Valor.
Yeah, and I think with Valor, there's going to be a lot of turnover already. They're making a lot of signings and a lot of changes, so I wouldn't be surprised if there's more opportunity for him to come into this Valor side that definitely needs a refresh after their disappointing season this past season.
Yeah. What player do you think that that should have been drafted in this U Sports draft?
There was, I think it was a player called Basuma, I think it was, or it was a defender, I think from, was it Cape Breton? And a lot of people I know, I was talking to Ben Steiner about it, like he put him as the number one overall pick for Valor to bring in. And he wasn't picked at all, which I thought was very surprising. So I think that was one of the biggest omissions for him. I forget exactly his name, but there was a few players in there that, you know, I don't watch the U-Sports all that much. I was mostly talking to people that do watch it quite a bit. And there was a few players that missed out. I know specifically for BC teams, some people were very surprised that only one BC native was chosen out of all four possible picks, look, local picks between Pacific and or two for Vancouver, but the Pacific didn't go local at all, even though there were some potential players from UVic and from UBC that they could have called upon. So there's a little surprise omissions in that regard as well. But aside from that, I think most of the players that got picked were the ones that we were expecting to get picked.
Yeah, some of the former Canadian Premier League players like Prince Amanda, Owen Toniak was not even picked. Even a backup goalie that played for League One Ontario didn't get drafted for it.
Yeah.
And lots of people question was it the performance from the youth sports soccer, or was it not the what we've seen from, or was it the performance from League One Ontario? It does question a lot. Even Rafael Garcia didn't get drafted.
Yeah, you're right. There is a lot of players that were either great League One players or were former CPL players that, yeah, didn't make the cut.
Yeah, but at least they do have a second chance being undrafted, and there's always tryouts for them. That's a good sign for them.
Yeah, the fact that they can go still and trial with teams if the teams need to look elsewhere is good for them. And like a lot of people say, you know, just because you didn't get drafted this year doesn't mean that your career is over. There's always opportunities, maybe within the league later on or even outside of the league. It's not all, you know, all bad for the undrafted players that are sort of waiting in the wings.
Yeah. So as noticed that the list of players in the youth sports draft was now to 200 players in the draft. Do you think that the draft should expand?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I think there has to be some things beforehand that need to expand. I mean, to be able to properly allow some of these players to get minutes and to not just, you know, sit on the bench and ride the bench the entire season, I think you need to expand the roster slots. But I think it's all a domino effect where you can only have more players in a team. It's only merited if you have more games to play, and you only have more games to play if you have more teams to play. And so I think it's a trickle-down effect where as the league continues to grow, there'll be more opportunity for more players to play in the league. And with the more opportunity for more players to play in the league, you'll have more options for them and more spaces for them. But I do think eventually I would love to be able to get to a point where we have 4 rounds of draft picks or 6 rounds of draft picks and have, you know, twice or 3 times as many spots open for some of these players. Because one of the things that it's always a worry in Canadian soccer is what about the players that fall through the cracks? That was one of the big pluses from bringing the Canadian Premier League in, is that a lot of the players that maybe didn't cut it at the 3 big MLS clubs, but still were good enough to be proper players, they had an opportunity to stay within the league, stay within the country with the CPL and be able to showcase themselves and then, you know, be able to move on to bigger and better things. Like we've seen a lot of the CPL products in the MLS and in Europe sort of be able to do. Now with the college players, I hope that the CPL also catches up so that a lot of the college players don't fall through the cracks and then we see them maybe have stagnant careers when they could have had great careers because they had to go elsewhere and it didn't really work out. Well, here in Canada, where they know they can actually grow and become solid players, and in the end that's what we all want, is just to grow the Canadian game and get as many talented Canadian soccer players to stay in Canada until they've developed enough to move on and go on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, and even make the team thrive to all the way to the CONCACAF Champions Cup, which we'll be talking about. So Forge FC, Vancouver Whitecaps, and also Calgary FC. As noticed, there's already been news Calgary FC is going to be playing in Vancouver Islands, which they've already announced. What was your reaction that Calgary FC is not going to be playing at AC, keep forgetting the name,
at Cofield, ATCO.
At Cofield. Yeah, and I've heard there was room. There was a source that they would play at the at Edmonton. That didn't work out. Which where this soccer field just where Clark Stadium.
Hmm.
That didn't work out, and there was another one. It also didn't work out because they were being used. What was your reaction to that? That Calgary FC is not going to be playing at ETCO Field.
I mean, obviously for the fans and for the people of, you know, Calgary, I felt really sad for them because this was something that they've been building towards since their inception, right? It's Calgary. They were the first technically winners of the league in 2019 when it was split into two, but they never got anything for it. And so that's been something that they've been, the fans, the club, Tommy Wilden Jr. has been building towards for 5 years. And for them to finally get something for it, get the, you know, the CPL, the North Star Shield, and be able to go to CONCACAF Champions Cup, that's something that a lot of people have been dreaming about. And for that to then be switched up on them and say, yeah, you can play in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, but you can't play it in your hometown, in your home province. You got to go somewhere else for it. Is obviously gutting, and a lot of strong reactions I saw on social media from fans and supporters. But, you know, further looking into it and understanding why, because of the temperatures, because of the pitch conditions, because of CONCACAF, you know, sanctioned fields, you can tell from what they said that they tried to exhaust every option to keep it in Calgary, but, or you know, in Alberta at least, but it didn't pan out. So they had to go to Langford, to the home of Pacific FC. And I know a lot of people are going to be pissed off about it. I'm happy that the club is going to, you know, make travel packages for the supporters who want to go and be there. Because that's, you know, that's the least you can do, especially since it's the first time a CPL club is going to face a MLS club, an American MLS club that isn't a Canadian MLS club. So it's going to be a very exciting match. Personally, I was actually a little bit happy because I am in Vancouver, so it's an easy boat ride over for me to watch some Champions Cup football, which I didn't think I was going to get because neither Vancouver FC or Pacific FC got Champions Cup football. But yeah, overall, it's a sad time, and it clearly shows that we need to be better in terms of planning for these things to happen, because hopefully it happens more often and we get more teams in the Champions Cup. And we have to make sure that we can make it viable for any fan to go and watch their club, you know, at their home stadium in their home province and not have to travel, you know, halfway or all the way across the country to be able to watch their team play at the highest level.
Yeah, and hope the weather doesn't ruin everything at ETCO Field and just basically, oh, there's no terrible weather for this, for the grass or anything out there that ruins the weather for Calgary. And as noticed, Orlando City FC, a great team to verse against Calgary FC, and not just that, winner goes against Vancouver Whitecaps or Tigres.
Yeah, that's going to be a tasty matchup. That's why, obviously, rooting for Calgary. It's a tough test, like you said. It's Orlando City. You know, they came in second in the Supporter Shield standings, I believe, or somewhere in there. And they are a good team. They had a resurgence, especially. Like, the way that they started the league to the way that ended was completely different. But they're a very, very solid team. They're a team that you want to be on your best game against, because they can hurt you in a split second. And you want to make sure that you play. Basically, the Cavalry have to sort of play a perfect game against them. They can't make any mistakes because they will punish you for them. And I think the stakes of facing the Whitecaps again, but this time in a different competition, not in the Canadian Championship, but in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, I think is enticing enough. And if it's not the Whitecaps, then you get to face a Mexican side, one of the strongest Mexican sides historically in Tigres. And I think on that side as well, Whitecaps against Tigres, that rematch, that's going to be a great match, like a great tie to watch. I'm sure I will be there covering that match at BC Place. But for Calgary, yeah, they have a lot ahead of them. They have a tough task ahead of them. But I don't think there's two other teams in the CPL that you would rather have having this challenge of facing these top teams than Cavalry and Forge.
Yeah, and we could go on to the team in Hamilton, Forge FC versus Chivas. Do you think that Forge FC versus Chivas is going to be a good match to also look out for?
Oh, 100%. Because the thing with Forge that they have an advantage over Cavalry is that they've played continental football before, playing in the CONCACAF League and even in the Champions League when it was named that. And they've faced teams like Cruz Azul before. So they know the caliber of Mexican teams before. And the great thing for them is that they have a lot of personnel still that have that experience, like Kyle Becker, Tristan Borges, David Chouinard, and obviously Bobby Smyrniotis as the head coach. So I think they'll be a bit better prepared than Tommy Wilson Jr. and his Calvary side. And it might not be as easy a match for Chivas as maybe Chivas fans might be expecting, because Forge know how to upset the odds in a continental competition like they've done before. So I think that is a very, very tasty tie. And if Forge can get a result in Mexico and bring it back to Hamilton and have that be where it all is decided, I think that'll be a great, great game for Forge FC to be able to play in front of their fans and give them a great game against one of the strongest teams in Mexico.
Yeah, and if Forge FC wins and moves on to the next round, they'll be versing Club America or Real Esteli. And that would be a big one if they were versing Club America. Everyone knows that it's a big team to go to. And if Forge FC actually plays in Club America, so home ground, we've already know it brings in the big fans out there. We've seen it in 2018 with Toronto FC, and it brings in the large fans out there. They love the sport.
Oh, yeah. Especially at the Azteca. I mean, Forge FC, that's what a lot of the players are probably the most excited for. And to be able to play, like if they get past Chivas, to be able to play at the Estadio Azteca, it'll be an absolutely incredible experience for them. And, you know, even America coming to Hamilton is huge, because that stadium will get sold out. And I'll tell you right now, it'll be sold out because more than half of it will be filled with America fans. Just knowing how it is. I mean, when Mexican teams came to Toronto FC when I was living in Toronto, and when Mexican teams came to a BC Place here in this past year for Leagues Cup, they compete with the local fans and sometimes overpower the local fans in numbers. Mexican fans are super, super passionate, super loyal to their teams, and will travel. And then obviously there's a huge Mexican population in Ontario and Latino population in general. They'll come out in droves to support America. So the atmosphere at, at Tim Hortons Field, if they get past Chivas to face Club America, and granted, if Club America can get past Real Esteli, that'll be a fantastic, absolutely amazing atmosphere. One I might want to make a trip out for to go see, because it's almost a once in a lifetime opportunity for a lot of these players and a lot of the fans watching their team square up against one of the continent's very best teams, most historic teams ever.
So I know that it's going to be round one in February. February is going to be the round one. So I'm going to go by every single match by round one. And what do you think of prediction of a Philadelphia Union versus a Saprissa?
See, it's tough because obviously, I guess we sometimes have North American bias. Well, we think the North American, the MLS team is, you know, better than some of these, you know, Central American teams. But a lot of these Central American teams are a surprise package. And you always have to consider that a lot of these American teams, North American teams, have to go to these places where sometimes the pitch isn't great. Sometimes, you know, the atmosphere surprises you. It's the style of football that a lot of these Central American teams try to put on is not one that you're used to, so they can surprise you. I still, though, think that Philadelphia Union will be able to get past Saprissa. I think it'll be tighter. I think it'll be... I'll give an aggregate score across both legs, and I'll say aggregate score Philadelphia Union 2, Saprissa 1.
So there goes Philadelphia Union would be versing Pachuca for the Liga MX team that had the advantage round. So next one is Toluca versus Herediano.
Yeah, again, the easy choice would be to go with Toluca, especially with, you know, the fact that they're there because of what they managed to do, being the runners up to the Apertura season this past season. I still would say that as much as Herediano, you know, they were semifinalists in the Central American Cup, so they are to be, you know, respected to a certain degree. I still think Toluca will be able to get it done, and I think it'll be overall a 3-0 affair.
So, yeah, and so Toluca, for you, is going to the next round. They will be versing Robin Hood. And Club America versing Real Estelí. Who you think that's your prediction?
That one is going to be a very good match, too, because of what I said before of Club America. But Real Estelí, they were a tough team. When I saw a little bit of the Central American Cup, they were a tough team to beat. And I think that they're going to be very, very pragmatic in the way that they play against Club America. I think it's not going to be a blowout like some people are expecting. I'm thinking it's going to be 3-1 for Club America, but where the three come from, it's going to be a very hard-fought goals for them to get.
Okay, so now at Chivas, Forge FC, who you think that's going to actually predict?
See, this one, it's a head versus heart. Obviously, head says Chivas because of how strong they are. It's a Mexican side, and you know, Mexican sides tend to be some of the strongest teams in the continent. But Forge FC, obviously, is Canadian Premier League team. And also, I used to work for them when I was before doing journalism. So there might be a slight bias here, but I'm thinking it's going to go aggregate 2-2, and then Forge go through on penalties.
So Forge FC moves on to the next round, and that will be Club America versus Forge FC for your pick on the next round. New England Revolution versus Independiente.
See, this one is interesting because New England Revolution on their day can beat just about anyone. And that's what we saw in the MLS. But also sometimes they had periods of inconsistency. And sometimes they just weren't, you know, at the races. So it depends on which New England Revolution side we see for this continental competition, especially, you know, are they ready for it to be so early in the preseason in February, depending where in the window it is and the like. I still think they have enough in them to get through. I'm thinking it's going to be like a 2-1 again for the Revs, but I think it'll be closer than people think.
So New England Revolution moving on, and they will be reversing Alajuelense. For you, so Houston Dynamo versus St. Louis City SC.
Yeah, the All-American side of the bracket. I think it's this one. Obviously, St. Louis had a great expansion year, but we saw in the playoffs that when push comes to shove in these, you know, high-pressure games, St. Louis don't have the experience yet to kind of pull through. In Houston, the second half of the season was probably one of the best in the MLS, just like on the record, on the stats. It's probably like one of the most informed teams up until their elimination in the playoffs. So I'm actually going to go with Houston on this one. I think that Houston will get it done 3-2 on aggregate. And unfortunately for the new expansion side, St. Louis, that's where their CONCACAF Champions Cup journey will end.
Okay, so Houston Dynamo moving on again, and they will be versing Columbus Crew. Tigres versus Vancouver Whitecaps.
Oh, again, this is another head versus heart. I'm super excited for this game and to be able to actually go and watch this game. I think the fact that the Whitecaps, you know, brought them all the way to penalties in the League's Cup, and that was, you know, in the middle of the season, a lot of players were tired. I think now that they have some rest, and I'm you know, they're going to have some new pieces coming in early on, I assume, especially because, well, depending on which window they play, whether it be in early February, late February, I think that it'll be in one regard easier for them because now they have the so much time to prepare. But the other half, you know, Mexican teams are still playing right now. I think Tigres have the final, or just have the final of the playoffs of the Clausura. So they're still going to be maybe a bit more in form than the Whitecaps. So it's very much a toss-up. But I'm going to go 1-1 aggregate score, and the Whitecaps get revenge on penalties and go through on penalties.
Okay, so Vancouver Whitecaps moving on. And now we go to Orlando City SC versus Calgary FC.
I think this is the one time that I'm going to go against a Canadian side, as much as it hurts me. I think not playing it at your home ground, not having your fans there, ATCO Field is such a great environment, and facing such a strong team in Orlando City, not having that experience in continental competitions, it's going to be a very much a learning experience for Tommy Wolden Jr. and his side. I think Orlando are going to go through on this. I think they're going to go through, not relatively easy, but still maybe like a 3-1 overall, 2-0 at home, 1-1 at Pacific. But unfortunately for Calgary, that's going to be a bit of a one-and-done situation for them.
So Vancouver Whitecaps will be versing Orlando City in the next round for you. And Monterrey versus Comunicaciones as is.
Yeah, I don't know actually all that much about Comunicaciones. I haven't really heard of, you know, their side from Guatemala. I know Monterrey.
I know they did really well against the previous Champions League.
Did they?
Went to the semis.
Oh, well, there you go. So maybe I should give them more respect. I did not know that.
They were versing Seattle, but they lost.
Okay. So I think now knowing that, I mean, Monterrey is still a very, very good squad, even regardless. They got in, I guess, because not by being runners up or winning. They were just like one of the next two best clubs in the aggregate table. So I guess you could say that maybe it's an easier team going in, but I mean, Monterrey is one of the most, like, I think it's one of like the big three, I would say, in terms of Mexican soccer, historically, at least in recent history. So you can never go against them. I think with what you said, it'll be a more exciting game now than what I originally thought. I'm going to go 3-2 Monterrey. But I think Comunicaciones will give them a run for their money now.
So you're going to pick Monterrey?
Yep.
So Monterrey moves on. And again, Cincinnati versus Cavalier.
Yeah, I mean, obviously on paper, Cincinnati looks like a stronger side. But these are two teams that is their first time in continental competitions. You know, with Cavalier, again, I didn't hear much about them beyond just, you know, what little. So highlights from the Caribbean Cup. But they finished runners-up behind Robin Hood. And again, you're playing in Jamaica. It's a completely different atmosphere than you used to in Cincinnati. It could be a very much a toss-up in these continental games, especially with all the travel that's going on. I think if Cincinnati can keep their big players like Lucho Acosta, like, you know, Brandon Vasquez and a lot of the other star players that they have there, I think they can pull through. It depends on how gutted they are by the time the competition starts. But I still think Cincinnati will get through with a 2-1 aggregate score.
So FC Cincinnati will move on for you, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So Monterrey versus FC Cincinnati. So Nashville versus Mocha.
Again, don't know all that much about Mocha beyond the fact that they finished third place in the Caribbean Cup. I actually didn't see any highlights from them. But I know about Nashville. Again, Nashville this season, they were very hit or miss at times. They were inconsistent in the league. So I don't think it's going to be super easy for them to get past the Panamanian side. The prospect of playing against Messi and Inter Miami surely going to be playing on the minds of players from both sides. But I think that Nashville still have the quality for them to be able to get past Mocha. I'm going to say another 3-1 aggregate score. I know I'm being very heavily biased towards North American sides, but it's tough not to be when you know the quality that they have. And I will admit I'm not as well versed with a lot of the Central American or Caribbean teams. So I'm going to have to back Nashville in this one.
Mocha's from Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Nashville SC moves on and they will be versing Inter Miami SCF Clubfoot. And I know that this is something also to notice that one of the teams moves on to the CONCACAF Champions Cup, and one of them is the winners for the U.S. Open Cup, and lots of drama coming in that MLS teams, for the first team MLS teams, will not be participating for the upcoming season, and they will be replacing them for next pro MLS teams.
Yeah, that was a bit of a shocker news for, I mean, basically everyone. Even if you're not of the, you know, from the United States, if you're not even part of the scene in the MLS or of the U.S. Open Cup, it's still a blow, I think, to just soccer history in North America, because it's one of the oldest, if not the oldest, professional competition for professional soccer in Northern America. And the fact that now they're sort of treating it as a lesser competition, as sort of something they can just kind of throw away, put on the back burner, and have their second teams play in, I think spits in the face of history a bit, and spits in the face of, you know, all of the historic teams and championships and matches that came before. A lot of people have been pointing towards MLS, to Apple, to this and their deal with MLS, saying that obviously Apple are just looking at the figures and US Open Cup doesn't draw any figures. I mean, a lot of it was broadcast for free on YouTube and it didn't get that many views. So obviously, I guess from one point of view, you could see that there were issues with it. But to have no strong MLS teams and only their second teams, it also, I think, spits in the face of the USL teams. Because much like in the, you know, looking towards Europe and the FA Cup in England, a lot of the League One and League Two teams relish a chance to face a Premier League team. Not only because of the sales that you could do, the potential, you know, crowd you could bring, but also just the opportunity against facing some of the, you know, top teams in your country and what that can do to how your team learns and grows. You know, it's an incredible opportunity for them, one that you don't get all the time. And so to basically take that away from USL teams is heartbreaking. Honestly, it's something that I'm glad CPL isn't going to follow, as Mark Noonan has announced. But it's, yeah, I was pretty disappointed when I saw the news, and I felt the rage and ire from a lot of, you know, US soccer social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram posts that they didn't like the decision at all.
Yeah, and it does question a lot. Who it just questions that who's going to be the if the winner of the U.S. Open Cup, who's allowed to be in part of the CONCACAF Champions Cup? It does question a lot.
Yeah, I'm hoping that I think they were saying that, you know, they're going to make sure that if the second team wins, then they will be able to get that Champions Cup berth. That'll be very interesting if an MLS Next Pro team gets into CONCACAF Champions Cup. What I'm hoping is that a USL team gets into the Champions Cup. I think that is the one silver lining from all of this, is that it gives more opportunity for USL teams to win the US Open Cup, which is, again, a very historical and prestigious cup. Maybe the prestige is marred a little bit by the fact that they're not facing MLS teams. But I think they'll be okay with it if it means that they get to go to the CONCACAF Champions Cup and there face some of the best teams in the continent. I mean, could you imagine, you know, like a San Antonio or like a San Diego FC or Loyal and or whichever one of these teams, I guess San Diego's is not, has been dissolved, right? So not San Diego, but Las Vegas, Las Vegas Lights, some of these teams being able to face a Club America or a Tigres or a Chivas or something like that, that would be huge for them. So I think if that is the result, maybe in the long term, it's better for USL. But I think overall for just this, the American soccer scene, it kind of is a drawback. And again, I think for personally, it kind of spits in the face of history that what came before you, what came before Messi and this Apple deal, it kind of just flushes it down the toilet.
And I think that it really messed up really badly that you made a deal, but it's not just that. Could it really be the League's Cup that affected this?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are saying that's because of fixture congestion. That's the reasoning behind it. And it seems ridiculous because you created your own fixture congestion. If you're thinking of the league and Apple, by making the League's Cup, and then you complain about the fixture congestion you made. And so you sacrifice one of the most historic cups in the history of U.S. soccer. And then you think everyone will be fine with it. I think from a marketing point of view, I don't know what they were expecting. I don't know what the rationale behind it was, because obviously people were going to push back on it. And especially, you know, in defense of yourself, if you say it's because of fixture congestion, everyone's going to point towards League Cup. Yeah, League's Cup was fun. Don't get me wrong. As someone that got to see some Mexican teams in BC plays, obviously it's fun. And you get to see some top teams compete. But I don't think that that should take precedence over, you know, history. Over, you know, a cup that has, you know, almost, I think, a century, or maybe, I don't know if it's closer century of history behind it. You need to have respect for what came before you. And I think that for the sake of quick money and buzz and stuff like that, sacrificing that is, unfortunately, it's on par with, I think, society these days, but it's still a shame to see in soccer in North America, especially when we're still trying to grow and catch up with other, you know, countries and continents that are much more developed soccer places, to be doing this and to make it more of like a business first focus rather than a football first focus is definitely disappointing to see.
Yeah, I know Major League Soccer is now into this questionnaire of how do we promote the league, and it always some fans think, I think you're missing promotion relegation. Some businesses of owners don't like promotion relegation, or but I know USL always say that they want promotion relegation, bring in that competition. We want some of our USL teams to get promoted to the Major League Soccer, but you have to make a buy-in that to make the Major League Soccer. That's one of the problems.
Yeah, and that's you know, one of the issues with, I think, North American sport in general, is that because it can sort of become monopolized quite quickly, and it can become very much you know, super expensive to get into the MLS. And if you don't have that money, if you don't have that backing, you need to have a business first sort of mentality in the first place to just get into the MLS. You need to have people investing and backing you that maybe want to get into the scene, but aren't football fans most of the time. They look at it as a business venture. And so from the start, from the base of it, there's a little already a difference in vision between the people that are putting money into the league and the fans. What's important? For some, it's about, you know, money. It's about having this be a successful business. While others, it's about, you know, their teams. It's about personal success. It's about what the things that make soccer beautiful and one of the most popular sport in the world. And I think, you know, there's obviously a huge debate about promotion relegation in North America. Ideally, obviously, it'd be great. Feasibly, is it possible? I don't think so right now. There has to be a lot of changes for it to actually be a thing, though, as much as I'd love it. I think it's a conversation that I don't think we can even really have, you know, practically, like realistically speaking, because of the landscape that we have in North American soccer. And until that changes, if it ever changes, I don't see it being, you know, worth anything to have a discussion, bar, you know, just dreaming.
Yeah, and it's also the reactionary from the fans. If they get relegated, it just like happened in Brazil. Santos got relegated from the first division, like, for a century.
Yeah. And the question is, obviously, like, if a team gets relegated, will the interest still be in there? You know, how many of the people that go there are going to be able to maintain and help sustain that club if they relegate to, you know, let's say it's the USL, is the second division. Obviously, there's a lot of fans in the USL, but are you going to be able to draw in as much people? A lot of MLS stadiums are quite big. They're big to draw in big crowds. If you're not drawing in big crowds and you have a pretty empty stadium, then you're making probably a loss. And then eventually unless you bounce back immediately and get back into the first division, you might be looking at, you know, investors being like, this is not worth anymore. They're pulling. And then you might have to dissolve the club. So there's a lot of risks, obviously, for pro rel, for the big clubs, and some for the small clubs. If they make it big time and then they fall back down, can they sustain that drastic change in their finances and in the flux between income, revenue, and loss? There's a lot of factors that go into it that it's such a headache that personally I don't delve so much into, just because until it looks feasible, I just don't see the point of trying to argue for it.
Yeah, I hope that Major League Soccer fixes everything, that they don't even screw up the mistakes that they do. And we hope that Major League Soccer comes back to the U.S. Open. Right now, it's already messed up what the United States Soccer Federation of their situation. And I hope Major League Soccer comes back to the U.S. Open. And that's a full time of the Red Leaf Card. I'm your host, Jacob, subbing out.